more than bananas, how the Christian faith works for me and the whole universe. Episode 5. The Fall. Part 2. The Genesis account explains our humanity, prefigures the dilemmas in every novel that can ever be written, and rings true. But how can it be true? Especially, how can creation's pain and human fallenness be linked? Humans came extremely late to the story of the universe. The first of them would have been born into a world where death was already reigning. Earth was dripping with blood, and thistles and diseases were thriving. The first man or woman would have found no perfect world to be expelled from, even had they stumbled across a metaphorical tree. Second, and a much bigger problem, is how can such a giant thing as the universe be somehow entangled with the moral choices of short-lived and tiny beings on a single microscopic planet? Genesis insists the universe is as it is because of what we humans are. That's silly, or at best, completely wrong. Surely we are as we are because the universe is as it is. The universe came first and shaped us, not the other way around. Yes. Except when we remember all this is happening under the reign of an infinite, eternal, and personality-imbued God who deeply cares about both people and creation. If he will pardon the metaphor, he is the elephant in the room. Include him, as he must be included, and the perspectives shift. Note, for starters, that we humans are more interesting than we think. We've spent the past few hundred years charting our own lack of self-importance in the universe, but this can be overdone or even completely wrong. For example, stars are simple. Atoms are simple. Even quantum theory is simple compared with the astonishing complexity of the human being. Maths is enough to describe cosmic expansion or quantum theory. Humans require a calculus of their own, one neither Isaac Newton nor anyone else has ever written down. We are utterly mysterious when you think about it. Alone in all the cosmos, so far as we've discovered yet, we are material beings conscious of being ourselves. The only place among all the galaxies where self-awareness happens among arrangements of carbon atoms may be the planet you are sitting on. I know that other bits of earthly life show the occasional slightly human trait. Crows can use tools and whales can talk to each other, and we share 90-something percent of our genes with gorillas, but in every deep thing that makes humanity really human, crows, whales, and gorillas are naff and no-hopers. They can't even do reality TV without help. Humans stand alone, perhaps alone in the universe. Certainly unusual among arrangements of atoms. That's a striking fact. Or look at it another way. We've already seen that time and size don't matter when you are God. When you are infinite and eternal, the small and the large, the short-lived and the long-lived, all look much the same. From where God looks down, a single person can be as important or significant as the whole universe. And as we mentioned earlier, when you invite eternity through the door, cause and effect flee out of the window. If human fallenness and creation's brokenness each has a foot in eternity, the problem of which came first or which caused which goes away. They can be entangled together beyond the reach of time. Imagine still one further thought. Imagine that we humans are eternal beings. Imagine that somehow we always existed in the mind of God. Imagine that He patiently built the whole universe so that finally His good idea could take material form. It's a respectable theory that the universe has to be as big as it is and as old as it is because it needs that long a run-up to get everything ready for humans to evolve and appear. Imagine that the universe is really a kind of scaffolding to be taken down when finished, replaced with something better, keeping what God wanted all along, friends, beings like Him, but other than Him, enjoying loving relationships together forever in a renewed world. When you take all that, the uniqueness of humanity, the way eternity and infinity turns the normal calculus to mush, and above all the fact of God, perhaps it becomes at least possible to imagine that our universe, ruled by death, lanced with pain, is that way because of the proud moral choices of us, little humans. Which is, like much of my faith, either unthinkable or life-changing. What does fallenness do to us? It makes us a mixture. First, it gives us the habit of making unwise choices instead of good ones. Second, it's also the source of a little spring of bad stuff inside. From within, said Jesus much later, out of the heart come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, arrogance, and slander, perhaps a few more as well. Most of us learn to hide this stuff behind a civilized mask, but pokers, provokers, up it all stirs. Yet we remain capable, three, of the most godlike acts of selflessness, mercy, and creativity. There's enough left of the image of God in us that humanity is awesome sometimes. Fourth, each in our own way, we long for a better day, for a better world, and even seeing it only dimly, we'll spend our lives working for it, teaching children, or healing the sick, or building a great business, or helping people thrive, or just doing our jobs well. That's what gets many of us out of bed in the morning. Welcome to fallenness. Hurt people, heal people. Reject God, strive to be like Him. Have good and evil jostling together in our hearts, and together flowing out into the world, cleaning it, polluting it. I can't resist a further question before we leave the fall. How does it work, really? Genesis divides the story into neat scenes, like a play. First, perfect world, humans the last and best element. Second, human pride and rebellion against God, freely chosen. Third, fallen world, fallen people. Cosmology and the fossil record tell us there weren't any neat scenes. There never was a perfect world, a totally free moral choice, and a subsequent crash. Death, for example, was present from the beginning, workhorse of evolution, engine of natural selection. The only way I can put this together in my head is with a sort of maths. Instead of locating Adam or human as an individual at the opening ceremony of history, it's better to think of Adam as all of humanity integrated over all of time. Perhaps the Genesis story isn't something that happened once in a past we all have to live with. It's each of our stories put in a blender and swirled together with everyone else's. Summarize the flickering thoughts flashing among the whole species through all of time. Aggregate all of that and Genesis pops out. We are Adam and Eve, and our choices are their choices. That is what we have become. That's our story, our nature, and perhaps God's dilemma.